ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Everything all right? Fans, yeah. Somebody doesn't? Huh? Anybody not want the fans? Because otherwise it's going to stay on. Okay. Question. There were several documents that I requested to be sent out to the people attending class. Did you receive them? Oh, how nice. Did you receive? You didn't even look. Huh? So one of those files was a PowerPoint. Yes? Didn't check. But, okay. And the title of it is Twinkling Stars. Okay. So, you saw it. You didn't see it. You're looking at it now. You're the one that wanted it. Come on. Just came? Yeah, you don't check your WhatsApp stuff too much. Okay. I did a little follow-up on the topic for this morning's class. So, in Vedic cosmology, do we really believe, you had galaxies and stars in the sky and things, do we really believe, are we supposed to believe, let's put it that way, is it what the Vedas says that there's only one sun in the universe? What about all the other luminaries in the sky? Whatever they might be. So, that question was discussed amongst GBC members some years ago. And in that PowerPoint is this opinion, that opinion, the other opinion, the other opinion. And you read it carefully and it can be read differently. That's how communication does go, but I felt personally that the answer given by the TOVP overseeing person, Antar Dweep, held the most credibility. It's not like the others contradicted them, but his point was, he's like what Prabhupada said, we adhere to, and then we look for how do you support that based on Vedic evidence, not does Vedic evidence support what Prabhupada said. That's his approach. And he discusses, you'll see it's there, there's different ideas of light that's a reflection that is literally like a mirror and the reflection of light in a mirror, or another kind of light is like channeling light. So the sun is the self-luminous, although the sun itself is receiving light from the Brahmajyoti. Other planets are receiving light from the sun, and they're emitting light that's from the sun. That's his conclusion. And the example given, you couldn't find it, was the Suryakanta gem. So here's Brahma Samhita 549. It's about Lord Brahma. It's that series of prayers that are describing different devas and devis. And when describing Brahma, the first line is Basvan Yasvan Yatashma Sakaleshu Nijeshu Tejaha. Tejaha means brilliance. So it's a comparison, yata, then tata. So just as the illuminating sun, Basavan, Yata, Ashma Sakaleshu. Ashma Sakaleshu, the word for word is, in various types of precious stones. Nijeshu, that's the sun's own, Tejaha, brilliance. Basvan Yata, Ashma Sakaleshu, Nijeshu Teja. So it's describing Brahma is manifesting the brilliance of the personality of Godhead, just as the light of the sun is sometimes manifest by the light of special types of precious stones. So a translation, just as the sun manifests some portion of his own light in all the effulgent gems that bear the names of Suryakanta, etc. So, I've never seen a Suryakanta gem. But our acharyas know about it at least, whether they've seen one or not. They know that such a gem exists. And reference to a Suryakanta gem is found in Madhurya Kandambani by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, who writes, well, the translation, it is important to note that many Puranas propound the theory that Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma, the theory of Lord Vishnu and Lord Brahma being one. The analogy of the sun and the precious gem Suryakanta Mani will help us to understand this oneness. So, the Suryakanta gem is not the sun. But there's a oneness between the light of the Suryakanta gem and the light of the sun. So it stores the light of the sun. There's gems that reflect the light of the sun. Put a diamond or something in sunlight or light and it will sparkle. But it doesn't sparkle without source of light. It sparkles. It reflects that light in a certain way. In a, you know, attractive way. Suppose, you know, when this is clean, it's not clean. But, needs to be cleaned. But, crystal, or, you know, not just pieces of glass, but precious crystal, it diffuses the light in a very, very nice way. It's expensive, and it's attractive, and so diffusing light and reflecting light are one thing, and storing the light, like it's described, the palace of Krishna, when Narada went, and even it was nighttime, the palace was lit up, because there were precious stones, like these kinds of precious stones, or the Shamataka jewel. It was brilliant like the sun. And when the residents of Dwarka saw Satrajit coming to town, they thought the sun god was coming to visit Krishna because it was just this light everywhere. That's the Shamataka jewel. So it's effulgent like the sun, storing light of the sun and emitting that light of the sun. So that's an explanation that Antardweep gave to this discussion about are we supposed to accept there's only one self-luminous planet in this universe? And his conclusion is yes. And how do we understand the lights of the other planets? This is how we understand it. They're receiving light and emitting light like a Suryakanta gem or like a Shamataka jewel or like they're channeling the light of the sun. They're luminous for sure. They're not self-luminous. That's his explanation. Then you can read what it says in that message. I just thought I would share that a little bit. And There was mention yesterday about one of the questions, just going to touch on this and not go so far with it. The purpose behind the occasional pastimes, we touched on it. And if you want to read further, Brahma Samhita, you can just look up in your folio search for Vibrahma Vilas, and mention only is made of such as, and you know, etc., the birth of Krishna. That's one of those occasional pastimes. Our acharyas otherwise say Krishna leaving Vrindavan, killing of the demons, etc. So those are occasional pastimes. And there's a function. But specifically, in the longest purport in Brahma Samhita is touching on this topic specific to Swakya Parakya. So it's like way up there. And, you know, there's a pastime that resembles the bhav that exists in Krishna Loka. And the assertion of our acharyas is they're identical. But there's differences. The difference is the pastime is enacted here, and in Krishna Loka, the bhav is there, but there's no pastime like it. Specific to Swakya Parakya Rasa. It's really elevated. You probably have to read it about 10 times to stop scratching your head to understand what he's saying. But not, that's a reference. It's one of those, Vibrahma Vilas. The translation of that is seeming error. An error that seems to be this, but it's actually that. Vibrahma. Brahma and Vibrahma. Brahma means error. And Vibrahma is like a big error. And a pastime. Or the sense of, the perception of, this can't be. There must be, there's something wrong here. And it's a pastime, it's a certain type of pastime. The occasional pastimes. Okay, so now we're continuing this morning with two verses, 10:37:21 and 22. So 21, this ends the series of verses where Narada is looking into the future, knowing the sequence of Krishna's future pastimes and reciting Krishna's future pastimes. And we heard there's two different ways we can understand. He is Trikalagya, that's one way. And another is he's experienced Krishna's pastimes in previous yuga cycles. But previous yuga cycles means another day of Brahma. And if it's another day of Brahma, Narada appears at the beginning of this day of Brahma. Because in his previous life, it was the previous day of Brahma. So both explanations are given as to how he knows Krishna's yet to happen pastimes. So it's future tense. Subsequently, text 21. Subsequently, I will see you appear as time personified, kala rupasya, serving as Arjuna's chariot driver and destroying the entire armies of soldiers to rid the earth of her burden. Her burden is the earth burden of these demoniac kings. And the Sanskrit is Arjuna Sarate. Arjuna Sarati or Partha Sarati. Arjuna Sarati. Vishwanath writes, there's no BBT purport here. Vishwanath writes, Narada said, I will see you who destroys the universe in the form of time, destroy the armies opposing Arjuna. Jiva Goswami writes, after all this, the list of pastimes. You will be the driver of Arjuna. You will be subordinate to him. That is not surprising for you. You will become the universal form, Kala Rupasya. Though you are the form of the universe, you are capable of destroying it. He just withdraws it. Kshapayishnoho. Sanatan Goswami writes, Ataha. We know what the Ataha means, right? Itato, yeah. So, after giving up fighting, in this case it means after giving up fighting, or it indicates a different topic, different from the previous pastimes. You will become the universal form, Kala Rupasya. Though you are the form of the universe, you are capable of destroying it, he repeats. Ksha Payishnaho. Vai means famous, or Vai means even though. Though you are the form of the universe, or time, and the inspiration for all actions, I will see you become famous as the charioteer of Arjuna. This shows you are controlled by others. I have committed offense by having Vasudeva and Devaki, who are worshipped by Arjuna, bound up. That's Sanatana Goswami. 22. So it's now the reciting of pastimes is over, and now it's back to two verses of glorification. Let us approach you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness and are always situated in your original identity. Since your will is never thwarted, you have already achieved all possible desirable things. And by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, after describing the future pastimes of Krishna, Narada offers his respects in two verses. I offer my respects to you, the Lord, concentrated Brahman, or spiritual essence, the object of pure realization. All the desires of the devotees reside completely in you, who exist eternally along with your associates. You fulfill all those desires because of your mercy. By your or your devotees' energy, all the influence of the material gunas is daily destroyed. And this same point is made coming up. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in a different commentary, writes, after describing the future pastimes of Krishna, Narada offers his respects in two verses, starting, I offer my respects to you, O Lord, who are concentrated Brahman or spiritual essence and the ultimate object of pure realization. All the desires of the devotees reside completely in you, who exist eternally, you who exist eternally along with your associates. You mercifully fulfill all those desires through your potency, or else the potency of your pure devotees. You help them every day. Nityam prati dinam, to avoid the influence of the modes of material nature. Interesting. And concluding is Jiva Goswami's commentary, who writes, Sridhar Swami explains that Vishuddha Vijnana Ghanam means exclusively or kevalam, the one form of knowledge. Shruti says, Na chakshusha grihyate rupam asya, or his form cannot be seen by the eye. Shetashvatara Upanishad. Yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyas tas yaisha atma vrinote tanum svam. Katha Upanishad says, the Lord can be attained only by his choice, and then he reveals his form to that person. Because the form is self-revealing, it is called a form of knowledge alone. That's this kevalam point. Though this form takes many forms, Krishna is the Angshi, like Avatari. He's the source of all Angshas. Akura also says, Bahu Murti Eka Murtikam. You are one form with many forms. Bhagavatam 10:47. The prefix vi in Vishuddha means one, or vishishta, special, or extraordinary. Therefore, in Sridhar's commentary, because you are this form of knowledge established by realization, by being firmly situated in your swarup, the form of the highest bliss, you completely possess all objects. Sva samstaya samapta sarvatam. Atma is the swarup, which is the shelter of all things, of all causes of knowledge. Since you are Atma, you are the form of highest bliss, the shelter of the highest unconditional prema. Because of this, by your nature, you have attained all objects, since by being bliss itself, everything is yours. Gives a Sanskrit for a Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad text. All living beings live because of his expansion of bliss. Another from Taittiriya Upanishad. If the Lord were not blissful, how could any being exist? Thus the meaning of samapta sarvartam is because you are bliss, you have many forms by your nature. Narada realized that, quote, form of knowledge in the blissful pastimes of Krishna. Though all your desires are already fulfilled, you have desires. Vachitam. Though you have attained all desires, you attain them in pastimes, or actions to attain the desires. Those desires are always fulfilled, amogha, not produced at some point in time. Those desires do not arise from material maya. If they were material, they would cause bondage. You are eternally free from the action of the gunas by your shakti, sva, tejasa. This means that your form, qualities, and pastimes are beyond maya. Therefore, I worship Bhagavan who exists by his own support, not by the agency of Brahman. I worship that form which is superior to Vijnanam, famous among the people. It is pure, shuddha. I surrender to Bhagavan, the condensed form of Vijnanam, full of bliss, or the condensed form of the famous Brahman. Question, how can Vijnana be a form with hands and feet? How can Bhagavan have hands and feet? Answer, his outstanding quality, proved by scripture, is stated. By his Sarup Shakti, his form has all qualities. Parasya Shakti or Vividaiva Shruyate, the Shaktis of the Lord are many. Svetashvatara Upanishad, Na Chakshushag Grihate Rupam Asya, his form cannot be seen by the material eye. His desires never go unfulfilled. By his Icha Shakti, he can reveal or cause the disappearance of anything. Question. Well, I have a Shakti known as material Shakti. Mayam tu Prakritim Vidyan, Mayi nam tu Maheshwaraha. No, translation of that is, know the material energy and the Lord, and its Lord, the cause of Maya. I am touched by that fault, unquote. By your Swarup Shakti, Sva Tejasa, you are never influenced by the action of the gunas. And that's it for this morning. Of course, for us, it's quite simple. Krishna is beyond the modes of nature. End of story. But there are persons that have a different idea, different ideas. So hearing it again and again from different angles helps to reinforce the same idea. No, we may not need to hear again and again and again and again from different angles. But there is consistency within the Vedas in describing the Supreme Lord, although sometimes it looks like there's discrepancy. There's this, and then there's that. And, you know, a short answer to that one is, he's the, since he's the source of everything, it means everything is within him. So even seeming opposites are within him. He's the resolve, that's a good one. He reconciles all opposing appearances of things. Because he's the source of all things. So one can see him this way, one can see him that way. He's within everything, he's outside of everything, for example. He walks and he does not walk, for example. He's near and he's very far away, for example. He's bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest at the same time, for example. And there's so many of those things. There's some very celebrated verses in the Bhagavatam that describe like that. Maybe we'll touch that tomorrow. But the Narada is an authority. He's one of the Mahajans. So we take what he says very seriously. And he's marveling at, in this verse, it's implied that Vasudeva and Devaki have their desires, the demigods have their desires, the Mother Earth has her desire, there's different living entities that have their desires. They're your devotees, and you're the fulfiller of all their desires, and you have your desires, and your desires is to fulfill the desires of your devotees. So Matra that away. You know, so, and then after Matra that away comes the other forms of other living entities' desires and Krishna fulfilling them. It's not just the killing of demons' desires, but reciprocating with the devotees' desires, just like we read yesterday, at the end of class yesterday, was the Krishna's contemplations when meeting with Uddhava, thinking, I fulfilled the desires of so many devotees here, there, and all around town. But I didn't go to Narayan Rishi, and it's now 125 years I gotta go. But if I fill up Uddhava with transcendental knowledge, then he can go to Narayan Rishi and those devotees in Badri, and then I can give my association through him. So that's the same principle. Say it again. It's the same principle of Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. The personality of Godhead has a desire, and the devotees of the Lord, knowing his desire, wish to fulfill his desire. And we can say the desire of Lord Chaitanya, but we can say the desire of Lord Chaitanya, the desire of Krishna. At least in the external appearance of things, to propagate Sankirtan, to relieve conditioned souls of unnecessary suffering and bring them to the original Krishna consciousness. And that's a mission. So there's different categories of living entities, but in separation from Krishna, the Angsi or Avatari, living entities are intrinsically, inherently wanting his association, wanting happiness, wanting knowledge, wanting bliss, wanting our natural life in the midst of so many unnatural things, and continuing on like donkeys doing unnatural things that are detrimental to us and to the earth and to each other, and it goes on. Maya's laughing. There's a recording that it was just transcribed of Srila Prabhupada describing a drama that Bhaktivinoda Thakur had written, The Age of Kali, Kali and Sin. And he was narrating it to Hayagriva, who was an English professor, and it was kind of like, or not kind of like, it was explicit. Prabhupada wanted him to understand the drama and to figure out a way that the drama could be manifest so that people in general could understand Kali and Sin. And interestingly, just, you know, a little history. Once upon a time, there was a temple in Manhattan, and one part of that temple in Manhattan was a theater. And there was a group of devotees headed by Sudama Maharaj and, you know, very celebrated devotees, Lohitaksha and Rasika and Lokamangala and Nayana Baram and this one, that one. And they had a theater group by Kunta players, and they put on the drama for Prabhupada. He sat in the middle of the theater audience, the little space around him, and everybody else was there, and they were fulfilling a desire that he wanted some time ago for Hayagriva to perform this drama. They didn't do the whole, because there's several parts, but they did the first part, and they were really good. Rasika was Sin, and Lokamangala was the personality of Kali. Ha ha ha! Make their heads spin. Maybe that was Sudama. Anyway, it was really good. It was really good. And Prabhupada liked it. Now, just yesterday, somebody forwarded to me, I'm digressing, but I'll come back. Rambaru Mataji's talk on Vyasa Puja Day, Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja Day. It's about a half an hour. And Where's Jamuna Jivana? He what? Oh. So, I'll send him the link. And one of the things she speaks about is what I just spoke about. You know, something that devotees need from time to time. There's many things that devotees need for time to time. You know, she's a devotee and she's a professional caregiving personality by her profession and by her nature. And one of the things that devotees need from time to time is recreation. And she, you know, like, have fun. And one of the have fun things is a drama. And Prabhupada, it was really fun. It was serious. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote the drama in Bengali and it was being performed in English. But it was humorous, but at the same time there was gravity along with, you know, the philosophical satisfaction of what the philosophical content is. And then, you know, the affective part, which is like, you know, the joy that the personality of Kali gets in making the heads of people spin. There's probably a video made of that because during those days we were making videos. It was really a good drama. Really a good drama. But some of those things from time to time, not just, you know, frivolity, but some ways where devotees can come together and experience different varieties, relaxing even, varieties of joy in one another's company, of course with Krishna at the center, not minus Krishna, but with Krishna. And there are ways to do that. Drama is one of them. It's one of the things that kids like, along with kirtans, kids like drama. So fortunately we have Amara, who is like, that seems to be one of the gifts that Krishna has given her creative gift and liking to create dramas. I remember, with much surprise, one of the Gita camps, Vrajabhumi, it was that the topic was chapter 10 Bhagavad Gita, and she came up with this real creative thing that the kids could make a three-dimensional Dwarka. Remember that? Huh? Premananda was in charge, but Vrajabhumi was the one that designed recollection. And it was like really fantastic and so fantastic that it was on a showcase in schools, public schools, for a month to show, you know, cultural diversity. And the kids were going, yay, cultural diversity. You get the idea. You know, that was just kids play. But there are different ways that adults can do things to bring fun or recreational ways, creative ways of bringing the message of Krishna to others. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. We'll start with the in-the-room discussion and then we'll go to online.
Maharaj, in text 22, Narada was speaking to Krishna and he said, "Your will is never thwarted." So how do we understand the fact that the living entity has free will and sometimes chooses things that, you know, Krishna doesn't really want us to choose, such as even leaving the spiritual world, and he, like a parent, you know, allows us, That's not his will.
Well, you understand because you have children.
His words particularly were, your will is never thwarted.
So supposing his will is, there's no will. Then there's no love. Supposing there's love, then there's will. Because it's voluntary. So it's will that there's love. So it's voluntary. And another way of looking at it is, living entities are his parts and parcels. He wills. There are living entities. It's not like once upon a time there weren't and he willed and then there were. But it's part of, the living entities are part of him. So they have tiny free will. And he doesn't interfere with tiny free will because there's tiny free will. There's parts and parcels, just like your children. Now you're not, your will determines everything. You're not Krishna. But you don't interfere with the will. I mean, you direct and you encourage and you train and you guide and this and that. And there's a limit. So Krishna guides and encourages, you know, but it's voluntary. And there's degrees of love too. It's also, there's all this diversity, all centered around our regard for Krishna. Because it's voluntary to have love. And that's his will. That there's love. There must be free will for there to be love. That's his will. It's part of love. You allow some freedom to those who love you and you love them. Something else, or that's it?
So, to understand the statement that Narada makes, you know, his form cannot be seen by the eye. So that's referring to, you know, like we see the deity, but we're not really seeing Krishna. There's, you know, the deeper and deeper ways of...
Yeah, if you, Krishna can reveal his spiritual oneness with that form or conceal it. His form is there, so there's the Bahir Darshan, and then there's Antar Darshan. And that's in Krishna's hand. Even to appear, it's his, as a deity form. It can't happen without Krishna's sanction. Okay?
Guru Maharaj, you spoke in the beginning of the class on cosmology, the stars, and you know, it's clear that for materialistic people in science and cosmology, there's a difference between stars and planets.
Yep.
And in, as you explained, there's, you know, there's the understanding of what the stars, they're not self-effulgent, they take from the sun, as you explained. And however, there's also descriptions of stars being planets, like, say, Dhruva Loka, Prabhupada says, a pole star. And but there's also descriptions of stars, you know, like in, when Krishna appears, there was, I can't remember, Rohini, or there was a star.
Yeah. Constellation. Like, Rohini is a
constellations and things like that. So, does that mean that some planets can be stars and some stars are just stars in the whole universal, you know, body and like that? Like we see thousands of stars.
Yeah.
Are there planets?
Of course. They're entities. You can say planets. You can use that nomenclature. They're planets. And they're effulgent. Now, where from the effulgence comes? That's the question. Now, look more carefully, you know, tonight or, you know, later today or something, at, you know, the different opinions. I expressed this particular explanation resonates most with me. And there's other explanations with scriptural reference. So look, and then you go, it gives, you know, Canto 5, chapter this and that. The Vedic cosmology. You look at it and read it and carefully look at the commentaries of Acharyas and look at it. So, I'm not taking the position that there's only one way to look at that question. I'm indicating that resonates the most with me. It makes a lot of sense. I invite you to do the same. See what makes sense to you. Because there are different ways of looking at the same thing. But very clearly, repeatedly, Prabhupada says, in this universe, there's one self-luminous planet. And the others are reflecting. That's this. So you look. No, it's just, we can just shrug our shoulders and say it's really not so important to me, so I'll just like let it go. But, you know, when people read Bhagavad Gita and they read what it says in verse, in chapter blah, 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 and they may ask you, you go shrug your shoulder and say, well, Prabhupada said, so I'm okay with it. And they'll wonder what's behind your convictions and all the whole story. So, you know, it's, I invite you, take a look. You know, what I gathered took about a month of back and forth in different persons. I just took the essence. There was more. And amongst learned devotees, there's different opinions or different understandings of the same subject. Okay, does that address your question? Anyone else in the room has something? Okay, we'll go to online.
Archana Vaidya. She asks, Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for your kind encouragement. I'm following up yesterday's discussion on efforts and mercy. You kindly mentioned that Krishna's mercy is there unconditionally, and our effort is to beg for his mercy. My understanding is, as aspiring devotees, we are begging for the mercy, and of course he is giving mercy. Then is the missing point that I am not yet matured in seeing his mercy clearly due to my clouded vision of spiritual understanding.
So it's just a reflection, and I'm confirming, yeah, that's, you have a good understanding of where you are and where you want to go and how to get there. It's not a question, it's just a comment, right?
If one is unable to experience that mercy, her question is because we're not able to see it. We're not able to...
We're covered. Consciousness is covered. Next.
That's now.
It. Anyone else? Krishna Archana, anything? Not this morning. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.